Welcome, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Leppendorf, Executive Director of the Flowchart Foundation, where we open new possibilities for exploration, discovery, community, connection, all kinds of wonderful things, by exploring poetry and the interrelationships of various art forms as guided by the legacy of John Ashbery. Up above us is the Ashbery Resource Center. Anyone is interested, welcome to email us, make an appointment. We love showing off all our many Quillo things. And lots of stuff coming up, even in the next couple of weeks. If you're not on our mailing list, there's a sign-up sheet up front. Just to mention the next few things, next Thursday, free online, we do a series called Close Readings in a Virtual Space, where a poet that we love picks a single poem, and you just get to talk through it with someone for an hour. And you can also just totally lurk, that's fine. Sometimes we have 120 people and 12 people are really talking. It's all great. But we have Donna Smith, and it'll be the last one for the season, so that'll be fantastic. That's next Thursday. The very next day, at 3 p.m., we have a deep listening workshop. You do not need to be a musician. It's for anyone who would like to be able to listen more deeply. We'll just be using our voices, but not singing and, you know, not operatic singing. Whether you're a poet, a musician, someone who just likes the idea of it, it should be really, really great. I have taken this workshop myself. It's fantastic. Ben Richter is teaching it, is a practitioner of deep listening. He studied under Pauline Oliveros. Will be great. And then that night at, I think, 7 p.m., the Ghost Ensemble will be performing an evening of kind of deep listening-infused works. I'll also be performing in one of the pieces, a couple of the pieces, so you can see me with an instrument in my hands if you care. But tonight is a wonderful occasion. We have a book, a brand new book. Can I just hold it up? Yeah. Here it is. And in fact, do you have your book too handy to hold? Oh, behind me. So both of these books happen to be, which are both available over there, happen to be published by the fabulous Night Boat Books. The publisher is right there. So not only can you buy these books, you can actually buy them from the publisher. How cool is that? So if you want to buy any of the two books over on the right, see Stephen. If you're interested in the books on the left, see me. We have some Ashbery books, a few other neato books over there. And I'll say also a little secret. Funto's book, which we are celebrating the publication of tonight, because of the way things happen in the publishing world, isn't really in stores yet. So you can buy it here and be the first on your block to have a copy. You can walk around with it. Everyone will be jealous, so don't miss this remarkable opportunity. I'm going to introduce our two poets, and then they're going to read one after the other, and then I'm going to run up and get rid of the stuff in the front, and the two of them will have a conversation, and perhaps even you'll join in. So first will be multimedia poet, writer, librettist, and artist Samia Bashir, whose solo and collaborative work has been widely published, performed, printed, exhibited, screened, experienced, and Oxford, from Berlin to Dusseldorf, Amsterdam to Accra, Florence to Rome, and across the United States, and now here. She has three poetry collections, most recently Field Theories, which we have here, winner of the Oregon Book Award, and her fourth collection, I Hope This Helps, really great title, is coming out next spring. So we can look forward to that, very exciting. And Nigerian-American poet and artist Funto Omojola has received fellowships from McDowell, Kaveh Kanem Foundation, Malay Arts, and the Poetry Project, among other things. And her work has appeared in all kinds of places, Boston Review, Pigeon Pages, Ghost Proposal, and elsewhere. If I Gather Here and Shout, you're going to hear from their first book, is also the winner of this year's Night Boat Books Poetry Prize, a pretty big deal. So happy to be celebrating this new book. You're a full-grown poet now. So exciting. So now, without further ado, Samia Bashir.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you. step from the airplane. My hair melts dead air. I walk quickly. Click clunk, click clunk, click clunk. Barbara Jordan, bronze and sober, glasses poised. The last me I'll see for 3 more days and 3 more days forever. Outside, I slow the click clunk to a 3-sound crawl. Click, click clunk. And etc. I am a woolly mammoth waiting at the cab stand. I am a woolly mammoth stuffed into a cab. I bear the long silence of my own extinction through the rear view, my head on the back seat, arms, horns, akimbo. I melt dead air. Blame humans for the loss of large mammals like myself. A new study suggests. My husband, my cousin, tuk-tuks my husk to a dry diorama. I step from the airplane. My hair melts dead air. I walk quickly, click-clunk, click-clunk, click-clunk. Barbara Jordan, bronze and sober, glasses poised, the last me I'll see for 3 more days and 3 more days forever. Outside, I slow the click-clunk to a 3-sound crawl, click, click-clunk, and etc. I'm a woolly mammoth waiting at the cab stand. I'm a woolly mammoth stuffed into a cab. I bear the long silence of my own extinction through the rear view, my head on the back seat, horns akimbo. I melt dead air. Blame humans for the loss of large mammals like myself, a new study suggests. My cousin tuk-tuks my husk to a dry diorama. The radio blares. The tide is high. The radio sings. I'm gonna be your number one. Thank you all for being here. I'm really glad to be here with you all. I'm so excited to celebrate Funto's new book. They have written the hell out of it. I'm going to begin with both the first, as you just heard, poem in this book called Field Theories. That was called Paleontology. And the last poem in this book called Field Theories, it's called A Small Matter of Engineering. Fair enough to know, I'm kind of a nerd. And half the things I write is just because it cracks me up. It tickles me. I tickle myself. So that it tickles anyone else is just a dream. And also tickling, well, I'm an American, so it's often rather violent. The old water tower once stored every drop we lived on. You know how poets often say, you know, a thing you need to know about this poem is blah, 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 blah. A thing you don't need to know about this poem is I grew up in a little hippie college town in the Middle West where every drop we lived on came from an old water tower that was shaped like a big beige penis. It is, according to, I believe, Wikipedia, the most phallic building in the world. It hydrated us. The old water tower once stored every drop we lived on. Its walls, dark-capped, bricked, beige as supermarket pantyhose, still rise erect astride the main drag. where our road splits between opposing camps. On this side, everything gone as long as anyone remembers, and the winter still cold as it's ever been. On the other side, listen, you've always had the broadest swath of the river, friend. Thing is, we're still here. Whatever else you've got left, well, on this side, everything gone as long as anyone remembers, and winter still cold as it's ever been. On the other side, listen, you've always had the broadest swath of the river, friend. Thing is, we're still here. Whatever else you got left, well, let us stay parched. Go ahead. I dare you. Coming soon, the new book. After, we'll call it many years, a new book made in the now. I call it I Hope This Helps, mostly because I hope it helps. From this new book, I'm going to finish my reading with a series, which is the oldest series in the book, called Maps, A Cartography in Progress. And I'm reading this because it's exactly what reading Funto's book said. No, read this. Do that. Yeah. I also come from an African diaspora. I mean, my mom's from Detroit, so there's that. And my dad and my stepmom are from Somalia. And one of my favorite novelists, Nourdine Farah, a Somali novelist, wrote a series called the Blood in the Sun series, of which one of the books is called Maps. Every word in this series is pulled from that book. Maps 1, A Cartography in Progress. Come, have a seat. There's so many seats. Sit. Sleepless. Drop. Conjure. Fly. Sit. Sleepless. Drop. Conjure. Fly. Large. Large. Secret. Yes. Question yourself. Question all those who meet you. Doubt. You were given birth to by notions formulated in heads. You were not a child, breathing just like everybody else. Exist. Think. Yes, that's the word. That is not the heavens, unless there are, unless. When your uncle speaks on your behalf, wonder of friends, creatures of fiction, whose likes and dislikes are a blood relation, leap to the tongue, prodigious imagination, journeys to a region solid and prominent, ceased to exist as beings, numb of soul. You are not yourself. Anyway, numerous doorways are enabled through forests without any clearing, stone steps too numerous to count. In the wake of the old man, there was a girl, a butcher, knowing what knives of destiny await. Maps 2, and cartography in progress. She taught you how you should best make use of your own body. She assisted you like the day's shadow from the purposelessness of our own body, your soul, your brain. She couldn't hurt herself, not then, anyway. Was this why she went? She nourished you, a body, totally her own, young as you were, needy and self-sufficient. She could choose to be herself, walk about in the nude if she wanted. When awake, and if you were the only person in the room, she cursed people in her language. It didn't matter whether you understood or not. What mattered was the look in your eyes. Surprise. Our incomprehension, yours and hers, because of her relations with you, you became a controversial topic to many. She was from somewhere else, up north. They treated her despicably, calling her all sorts of things. No one took the trouble to reach the bottom. Who was she really? To you, she was the cosmos. Hers was the body on which you're growing, nourished. Hers, no, yours, was the body. No, hers was the body upon which you're growing, nourished. It didn't matter in the least whether she came or not, if she had been a warrior or no, she meant the world to you. No one else needed her as much as you, as often as you. When she wasn't with you, with a self-abandon, you cried and cried. With a self-surrender, some say, she bewitched you. From your first encounter, you didn't like the way she outstared you. You paid her all attention, leaving you more or less yourself. The look your eyes, described as wicked and satanic, did not appear at all convinced, not quite a being. Perhaps this explains why she exists primarily upon the fortune of different kingdoms, the living and the dead, disappointed again. Allah is the space and time of all Muslims. Allah is the space and time of all Muslims. Allah is the space and time of all Muslims. Allah is the space and time of all Muslims. But not you. As usual. Resist. She had organized her life around you. She awoke not to say her prayers, but not to attend to your needs. Was she you? Even-legged? Sure-footed? But then how could... The small world of darkness... Cast by your stars, you opened, you touch yourself in order to be reassured. In bed, the priest was in his foulest of moods. You are touchably there, without reassuring yourself. What am I to do then? Be accommodating. You are insane. And are you jealous? You are never alone. So much so that I see you all the time, you smell of urine. Why can't we just marry, you and I. And let our bodies join without odor and cries we cannot. In body and spirit too, and know I can be yours only in sin, imagine you and burst into tears, and burst into tears, and burst into tears, and burst. Picture the truth you lost. Count how many times you were frightened. You remember little kindnesses extended to you, shunned, cried, touched. You justified scolding yourself. You didn't want children. You began to reason thus. You didn't like children because, as always, daughters busied themselves as women caring for infants with broken hearts as though they were little girls. In retrospect, part of you admired these girls from a distance anyway, climbing up a wall or basking in the sun. The life-giving aspects interested you. You once said it was the visceral dislike of children's babble, their mechanical contrivances, the noise, demands, the surprise. Listen to you, suffering from some complaint you had no name for. But you are an adult, surely. But you are an adult, surely. But you are an adult, surely. What you didn't say, whatever it was worth, you knew when bedrooms closed, sleeping lids, when their tongues tasted staleness in their mouths, their parents surrendered. In bed, when thoughts were unharnessed and allowed to roam freely, you knew you could tell stories no one was listening to. In the late hour, in the night's darkness, you allow the adult to emerge, express adult thoughts. And then the two of you, like adults, exchange secrets. Condemn and pass judgments, talk about daily bloodletting. You ate 10 times as much at 4.5, weighed a ton, nicknamed Monster, hearing mother say, "Why have you made me a monster?" You tell the story, but suddenly features change expression. That's enough. That's enough. Change the subject to something trivial. Tell a story until your breathing slows, shallows, knee highs. Mothers were generally indulgent first, then ruthlessly rigid, strict. You imagined constant loss all the time. Instructed women in their best, tottered past them. Some can afford indulgence. Some see angels and marvel. Some have no children and are thus blessed. Many admire adults who admire them. Numb of soul. You are not yourself. Anyway, sit sleepless, conjure, fly. You are not yourself. Anyway, when your uncle speaks on your behalf, wonder of friends, creatures of fiction, whose likes and dislikes are a blood relation. Large, large, secret, doubt. You were given birth to by notions formulated in heads. Yes. Question yourself. Question all those who meet you. Sit. Sleepless. Drop. Conjure. Fly. Exist. Think. Yes, that's the word. This is not the heavens, unless there are, unless you were not a child, breathing just like anybody else. Leap to the tongue, the way blind eyes tend to. Numerous doorways, solid and prominent, are enabled through forests without any clearing. Ceased to exist as beings, prodigious imagination journeys to a region. In the wake of the old man, there was a girl, a butcher. Stone steps too numerous to count. In the wake of the old man, there was a girl, a butcher. In the wake of the old man, there was a girl, a butcher. In the wake of the old man, there was a girl, a butcher. In the wake of the old man, there was a girl, a butcher. In the wake of the old man, there was a girl, a butcher. Knowing what knives of destiny await.
That was beautiful, thank you. Thanks for being here. This book has been a journey, and it was written throughout some of the most devastating physical moments of my life, so I feel really lucky to be here with you all. But I think I'm still in a state of grief, and so I'm going to be reading from that place tonight. I want to thank Nightboat and Jeffrey, and also I don't think I've ever told her this directly, but Dawn Lundy Martin, who's here, is the reason that I kept writing, and I owe you so much, so thank you. I'm going to read some essays from my book, and then I'm going to recite some poetry for you. Today, we the inquirer, we the village come to Babalawo. How should we respond to sickness in this place? How do we expel sickness from this place? How will we know when the sickness has been expelled? Was sickness always in this place? You can find videos of scholars translating Ifa divinations on the internet. There's one I've been watching for 10 years. In the frame, Babalawo sits flanked by two women. The man holding the camera motions to one. Right, BC? Can you tell them what you're doing? Babalawo continues. The last time I was in Oshogbo, I asked two dudu drummers if I could interview them. They took me to a Babalawo. The men would only talk to me if I saw a Babalawo. They took me into a room, then brought out the slate and did what they do with cowrie shells and concluded that I was a good man. Of course, I knew I was a good man before Babalawo said so. The first time I visited Babalawa was in Oakland many years ago. Since then, I've been taking the same photograph to him. Babalawa places a photograph in front of him, takes a knife, and spears the image. Sometimes he rubs oil on the surface of the picture, other times he rearranges his shrine. But Babalawa always puts a knife through the photograph. He tells me that one person in the picture might cry from her sleep, unable to see. Other times, she might wake up unable to move. Eventually, she might die. Babalawa tells me this can be done even without a photograph. Once, a woman who wanted to be promoted at work came to him. Once a woman who wanted to be promoted at work came to him. She wanted a particular position that her boss had. She rubbed a powder that Babalawa had given her on her boss's seat so that once he sat on it, he developed a disease that killed him. She took his position. A man crawls belly bruising floor. Leave him there. I sit at a table next to a woman cooking soup while Grandpa Ado Ikiti tells me about a restaurant where they kill the goat only after you've ordered it. The waiter relays her order to the chef, who then instructs the runner boy to get on an okada, drive to the farm, choose a goat, and slaughter it there before bringing it back. The Yoruba Dunu drum is very portable. You can hang it around your shoulder and move with it. In fact, there's an Ilorin-flavored Dunu drumming style called Dadakoada, where an ensemble, a group of two, three men, play and sing to restaurant goers as they eat. Oftentimes, the ensemble is also accompanied by a dancer. These dancers are typically women. At times, the drummers say nasty things to the restaurant goers to excite them, but everything is taken in a light mood. The ensemble comes around to each table in the restaurant and drums in a very unobstructive way, not too loudly. The ensemble usually starts a little bit away from each table. Initially, restaurant goers ignore them, but after a while, the drummers move closer, and the patrons get excited as they continue to play and even shake a little in their seats. At times, they engage the drummers and make them sort of work for their money. They act like, "We're not giving you any," immediately to entice the drummers. So the drummers then continue to play and play more voraciously. Then maybe after 15 minutes, the restaurant goers finally give the drummers money, and the ensemble moves away to another table to repeat the same cycle. The woman cooking soup turns and turns and spools and spools. The runner boy brings the goat back and brings it back and brings it back and brings it back and brings it back. There are some white garment churches that get their powers from Babalawo. People who attend these churches believe in miracles, believe in priests prophesying things in their lives, their futures. If no miracles happen in these churches, they grow empty. So many priests visit Babalawo so that their congregations will flourish. There's this tree that's common in Yoruba land called Iroko tree. It's not a fruit tree, but it could be any tree in the bush, really. Some priests go and nail things, hair, cloth, photographs, to the trunks of these trees. And as they nail, they recite incantations about what they want to happen. Maybe a church member doesn't want a neighbor to have a child or to know peace. Perhaps another wants retribution for something done to their forefathers. These curses are typically last across multiple generations until the yoke is broken. Most of the maledictions are broken in good churches with prayer and fasting, which is not easy because the spellers are also fighting in the spiritual world. I know people who have found where objects are nailed in the forest. Once they remove the nail from the trunk of the tree physically, the spell is broken. If you're afraid of or odious to these people, it may be easier for them to embattle you in the spiritual world. Nobody can kill me, though, because I'm so good. So I've done this experiment before. I'm going to try it again tonight. A lot of this work is about inheritance and collecting and gathering, and I think that's also the work of memory and of orality. So I tried to memorize the poems in my book. I'm going to recite what I can remember and whatever comes out as it does. And yeah, we'll see what happens. Pa sad today. Pa before Pa been sad. Today Pa is a tailor, stitch whole village. Pa scrape inside of Pa's Pa's mouth, found whole village's blood underneath white coat tongue. Stone down Pa's Pa's throat, nothing gets put back where it belongs. For a while it's just me. I put on morning jacket wherever I can fit it, peel skin, shave, meet the girl of my dreams. But then this psychic tells me my twin daughters are gonna love me, really love me, like be obsessed with me. And so in the midst of decorating womb, the elder uncoils and unvessels. I prepare the entirety of the Oshiglo's cookbook and we both sugar our lips. Maybe want shogun, but it only takes a handful of guests to tap on something swelling before you realize raw can't go through you the same way anymore. And what a silly thing it is to not be able to really shit. By the time they found my mother, she'd rolled under the bed. They found my mother rolled under the bed, screaming, "My child." What is this tumbling place where I am center unmoving? What is this tumbling stage around me and around me where there are gestures and sticks curved towards my chest? In a different time, we are gathered in perfectly shapen basins. In a different time, a worm croaks around us, and we are preoccupied with where the croak will land, not with its projection or its mouth. In a different time, someone can be heard shouting about a fissured egg and about men who fissured egg in egg sack. Croak us your mouth quickly, not soft. What is this sirening place where I am edges cascading? In 1943, Grandpa Ado rode his motorcycle to AKT and broke his arms on his way back. He spent all of January with his arms outstretched like Jesus. The butcher says, "Come and eat," and I do, slender arm reaching for where bowel and bone and tendon meet. The butcher says, "Come and eat," and I do, fig and fig inside fig. The butcher says, "Wake up from the coma mining." No, wake up from the mining soil. There are not many disciples who can remember there were 300 surgeons in the hospital that day. There's one who doesn't think I understand him, but I understand him perfectly. Croak us your mouth quickly, not soft. I can ask birth body if I'm going to be okay, or I can try to read the lips of the man who I understand perfectly. Again, I fill my sacks with rotted things, aged and aging meat webbed together until polished. All day on this land, sickles formed against me prosper. Again, I line my belly with rotted things. All day on this land, sickles formed against me prosper. Again, I line my sacks with newly shined and favored things. All day on this land, sickles formed against me prosper. Again, I line my belly with rotted, rotting meat. All day on this land, sickles formed against me prosper. The injection is coursed. What did I miss anyway? What are the women with the two small veins whining about anyway? I brought you two whole bags of girl in the bush. Is that not enough to unmark me? To unspool these tubes from my throat and from my sides and from the sides of my sides, their sides too. The nurse is singing praise songs. Or maybe the woman chewing eggs in the corner, she's singing, "I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. I have decided to follow Jesus. No turning back, no turning back. The world behind me, Jesus before me. The world behind me, Jesus before me. The world behind me, Jesus before me. No turning back, no looking back. At Sunday service, I'm afraid my mother is God and that she'll notice I'm sitting on my fingers. I love you, I love you, I love you. Its verification isn't mechanical, isn't wholly just stageable, but screaming and collapsing is also a kind of love. If you find a girl in the bush, leave her there. If you find a girl in the bush, banging her head until the noise leaves, leave her there. Then carry the noise in your chest. If you find a girl beating her head until the noise leaves, then body beating floor. Then it's like we're dancing, Ma, these still steps. What is the sound of wiping yourself off of the floor, Ma? Pa sing song today. Pa a sing song today. Pa a disco until dawn, 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 the danciest dancer man that ever did dance today. Pa fly today. Pa press four fingers against anyone in the village who will allow today, who will accept today. Pa sanctimonious today. Pa victorious today. Pa unfurls today. Pa unboys today. Pa finds stones he's hidden under bed today. Pa fig-figging today. Pa praise-worshipping today. Pa prop-propping today. Pa brimming today. Pa be a brim thing today. Pa sapid today. Pa unboys today. Pa unfurls today. Pa sleep-slopping today. Pa sleep-slooping today. Pa astound today. Pa festound today. Pa's pa a brimming thing. Pa a brim thing. Pa's pa arriving thing. Pa arrive thing. Pa's pa a shelling thing. Pa a shell thing. Pass pa a brimming thing, pa a brim thing. Pass pa a wombing thing, pa a womb thing. Pass pa a wounding thing, pa a wound thing. I'll stop there. Thank you. Hi.
First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
First of all, congratulations. What an amazingly beautiful accomplishment.
Thank you.
And by accomplishment, I mean achievement. And by achievement, I mean making of magic. And thank you.
Thank you so much. So I'm kind of excruciated by this question, and it's kind of the question of my book, you know, how we respond to sickness in this place. And I think to a great extent you write about kind of this idea of existence through continued rupture in a way that's not detached or unconcerned. So my first question for you is, what do your days of wine and pastry, to quote a title of your poem, look like these days, despite or through the terror?
Mm. Well. You know that poem, Some Days of Wine and Pastry,
in the new book,
is really such a quintessential poem of the lockdown moment. All the fucking baking and day drinking and night terrors. and waking up. So I was one of those random people in Hawaii in 2018 when suddenly there was a ballistic missile coming from Korea to kill us all. And I was living on the West Coast at the time. So already, it was 2018, so already we were a good 2 years into waking up going, what the fuck happened 3 hours before? We're 3 hours behind the East Coast. God knows what the hell this man has done by the time we wake up. And Hawaii, you're now 5 more hours, and a ballistic missile is coming from North Korea to kill you. And they say, take cover. And you're like, it's an island. There's no cover. And you're like, my whole life has come down to this motherfucker sending a ballistic missile to kill us in Hawaii. And then there was COVID. So the day drinking, the night terrors, the baking of bread and cookies. And as we enter this moment, I thought a lot about this moment as you were reading, this space of the terror of the mother who's too often right, even in the midst of when she's often wrong. Hashtag Mamala. And yet, how do we deal? And I think that's the question, right? So what do we do, as June Jordan said, those of us who did not die yet? What do we do? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the question I'm often wrestling with. And it's not so much about illness individually as illness as a state of being. There is an illness that we're sitting through right now. There's a It's really hard to talk about these things in the context of what's actually going on, because I want to say something like illness, and then I like go through the like 97 articles of like RFK, like who's going to run the health services, who also says there's no such thing as infectious disease, and it's, whoa! There is an illness that we're not sure how to, or if we can even inoculate ourselves against. And so that's a question, and a really, really life-digging question for me in the work, you know? So what do we do? How do we live? And someone asked me the other day, in the way that people often do, oh, you're a poet. What do you write about? I'm like, well, I don't believe poems are about a thing. I believe poems are a thing. And if I were to say what I write about, it's about us. And how do we treat each other? How do we live together? How do we survive all of this? And in fact, maybe what if we want to thrive? Imagine. And so I only can answer that question in poems, really. Mm. It's so funny, like Field Theories, that book, it really takes on quantum physics in this really kind of like raw way. That's what the book is about, if you want it to be about something. It's not really about something. But it's like, oh, well, tell me. Talk to me about quantum physics then. And I was like, I literally wrote 97 poems about it. That's my answer. And one hopes that one's life and work is not for nothing. Mm-hmm. One hopes that, again, as June Jordan said, you know, the thing about poetry is this desperate need to communicate something to someone. Like, I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you. And can we communicate something? And can we then, in this space of communication, do something, be something, change something, alter something, transmute something? And that's what I also see happening in your narrative. Parentheses S. Right? I think that the way that you're pulling not just these stories, but the viscerality of our relations, of our spiritualities, of our familiarities, is doing that. Hey, 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 I'm talking to you, and this is real, and this is necessary, and this might just save our lives. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, back to you, that idea of, like, who are you talking to? And not just who are you talking to, but then how does who you're talking to expand to include everyone in this room? Does it? Does it not? Is that a pointless question?
I almost feel like I wrote this book for myself, and that, mm-hmm. that there shouldn't be any readers. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of versions where there's a lot of explaining. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot about something Akwaeke Emezi, one of my favorite writers, Nigerian writers, and they said something, you know, that they're writing from the edges. They're not writing from the center. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about staying at the edges and making everyone move over to my knowledge system, which is my center, rather than writing from the center of Western knowledge systems. Mm-hmm. And so I think I wrote from that place. I write from that place. And I also think that it's not... I think in this work I do a lot of protecting, and I think there's an anthropological voice in addition to the poetic voice that is deceptive and hides and tricks and lies. Mm-hmm. And so I think practically those are the tools I'm using, but I wouldn't say that I'm writing for anyone in this room in particular, for a white person, for someone with a Western understanding of language, mm-hmm. to people who speak English. Even my the way I'm using English is very Yoruba. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, right? I've said many more times than I probably should that I think English is perhaps the most difficult language in which to find poetry. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a language of commerce and capital, and it's really great if you want to know how many beans are in a shipment and how much to pay for them. It's a great language for that. But poetry is tough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that you really engage the English language through this Yoruba sensibility, mm-hmm. in a way that is really kind of powerful, mm-hmm. and evocative. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, is that how you talk to yourself?
That's an interesting question. Hmm. I think I'm receiving a lot of information from my ancestors, both the good ones and the bad ones. and so I think for me, a lot of writing is actually like visioning and spelling, in terms of casting spell, not spelling. And yeah, Yoruba is a tonal language. Mm-hmm. It's very musical, so I think there are just cultural and language, like idiosyncrasies, that come out in my work and my language that are very much cultural, and that I think we see across like Yoruba writers from like Chono Achebe to Eleno Yemi to contemporary Nigerian poets and writers. So I think there's that texture that's inherent in the way that we hear stories being passed down, or that folk tales are told to us, or that we sit around the house and listen to like our parents gossiping, that I mm-hmm. think is inherently in the language. So maybe it is me talking to myself, but also I think it's a lot of receiving, mm-hmm. and then putting that on the work. And I'm thinking about this thing you're saying about poetry, and I think we mostly live outside of our bodies, but mm-hmm. when I'm reading or chanting like I just did, that's actually when I feel like I'm saying the thing that I want to, and it feels like the book or the poem is moving me towards that, you know, body as drum. Mm-hmm. And I know that you have multidisciplinary practice. I'm curious if you how much you think poetry is a vessel for saying the thing versus your operatic work or visual work or performance work.
I mean, there's a reason that I call it all poetry. Mm. It's all poetry. That's the reason. But also, I think the breath is kind of the everything. Is that what you're talking about? Is that place where trying to meet this kind of like the difficulty of the English language, the tonality, and I might argue, any linguists in the audience, that American English, we're both speaking and writing in American English, is a real tonalizing of the English language that I think is a very black thing, actually. American English is very black, hate to break it to you. But we just shift and change the language for like hundreds of years in many weird ways. The way that we're having this argument about wokeism, don't even start it. The tonalities, which then introduce themselves into these multiple media, right? There's a way that the hum is a critical part of English syntax for me. The way that the breath is a critical part of the English syntax for me. The way that repetition, I don't often read a poem straight from start to finish. Mostly because we don't listen that way, especially today. If I read a poem from start to finish, you missed half of it because you're thinking about the line I just read and you're missing the line I'm reading. And if I go back, now you're catching it. If I repeat it, now you've heard it. And so that is one of those ways, I think, in terms of if instead this is an installation exhibit, which is poetry, poetry of mine, then that installation exhibit is playing with those same tonalities, playing with that same repetition, playing with that same breath, even in fabric, even in fountains. If it's video or performance or something like that, it's the same thing, really. Like I when Field Theories came out, my dear publisher Stephen knows so well. This came out at the beginning of 2017, which means, yikes. But also, what I didn't know when I started, the 6 months beforehand, what I did is I worked with, I'm also a collaborative artist. I love working with other artists. And I worked with a dear friend of mine, Roland Dawen Wu, who's a video artist. And the two of us together created video remixes of the poetry in this book that then we debuted every month for the 6 months before the book came out, starting in September 2016 at different places. The first was L.A. at CalArts. No, the first was in Portland, because that's where we were at the Time-Based Art Festival, then at CalArts, and then, you know, various cities around the country. Ironically, the November release was supposed to be in Washington, D.C., and then November of 2016 happened, and oof. And the only constraint we had as we did this was we were not making these videos in advance. We did all the filming that summer, but we then created the videos from what we filmed that month at that time. November was the latest one we got out because we were all living in terror and what the hell just happened. And I took it to the Trump Tower in D.C., the idea also was that it was going to be broadcast outdoors on buildings. And that's what we did for 6 months. But for that 6 months, what we didn't realize was what that 6 months was going to be from September 2016 through February 2017. And that was, like, I call this the kind of ink on tree form of this poetry. This is just a delivery system to me. The poetry is what we then make of it. This is, you know, it's easy to say this is the score and how you play the music. The music is something else. It's not on the paper. And so
it's the same thing. You know, the music of the poetry is, it's not on the digital ones and zeros of the video. It's in the light and as what it projects, you know. So there's, I really think the poetry is this life force that we engage with, and how can we capture it and form it into song in different ways. And these are all just ways to get us there. And to like, and so that in that way that like I speak English, you speak English, I can convey this to you. In a way that is, it's out of my body and into your body, and now our two bodies are making this thing. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, this is a question I was curious about, even hearing you read kind of where this poetic aesthetic emanates from, if it's, you know, cultural, ancestral. And yeah, I think like you're saying, for me, this is a score. And I think it's ancestral, and it's in my body, and it's in my voice, and it's in my dreams, and in my parents' voices.
I think that ancestral is a real thing. And I think, again, like I said, I'm of the African diaspora in so many ways, right? But I also, in a way that since 2016 has been a little difficult to say out loud, especially out of this country, I'm such a fucking American all day. I'm from here. I speak like this. I've eaten way too much McDonald's in my life, like all of that, you know. And so this idea of the ancestral is, I think, really kind of critical, and is a very critical and maybe even crisis-banked space for Americans from which to come, because for the most of us, our deepest ancestry is not on this land. Mm-hmm. It's not here. Mm-hmm. And so where is it coming from? Mm-hmm. And what is that conversation? Mm-hmm. And how did we get here? You know, Somalis somehow migrate to the coldest cities in America. I never understand why. It's really cold in Minneapolis. It's really cold in Toronto. It's really cold in Maine. But go ahead, do your thing. You know, it's, but and what that does to the skin that's accustomed to the equator, what that does to the way the language hits and sounds. There's a Somali filmmaker staying at my house right now. She's working on a project, and just hearing that language all the time, all day. She's talking on the phone, blah, blah, blah. She talks on the phone a lot. She's talking on the phone all day. And it's just like, but hearing her speak that language is very different than hearing my parents speak that language. A, she's a millennial, so it's going to sound different anyway. But like, there's also, they have very different American twinges on it, you know? My dad came here in the 60s. He came like a student expat kind of dude, you know? He has a very different way of putting the languages together. And now that he's much older and is losing his language day by day, it's really interesting to see that kind of Pan-African upbringing of his into the English language that he has adopted as his home, and how, as he loses his English and leans back into the Somali, which is not really Somali so much as it's this Americanized thing. It's, I mean, how can you not poem that stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, it is begging us to try to understand who we are. Like who we are. Because that's the thing that I think. And I'm, you know, I'm not trying to throw a flag and rah-rah here, but there's a thing that is very particular about being American. We are a very different kind of people. And mostly because we are so many kinds of people. And, you know, there's very few countries you can go to visit, and I love going to visit all of the countries. But there are very few you can go to visit where there are like 800 different kinds of people in the same room who are all of that country, you know. More these days, you know, as Europe deals with the migration that I like to call the fuck it round and find out of it all. You know, you go destroy somebody's country, they're coming to your house because your house has water. Theirs doesn't anymore because you stole it. Sorry, I don't always tell you. But we've all been here for a long time despite all that and trying to figure out how to be together or not. And what does that mean in terms of how we make art? What does that mean in terms of how we communicate and make poetry, of how we all reform this English language that is not an American language, it's an English language that we've then brought over here and refashioned for ourselves, tonalized and things. And how that then also gets to be particularized in the way that you Yorubicize it, you know?
Yeah. I think, and I say this a lot, but I think rupture can be, is revelation. As someone who had a really intense, you know, medical experience, and I was in a coma, and my body didn't work the way it used to, but it specifically had to do with my stomach, and so I was raised on this idea of, like, your gut or trusting this thing, and so when that ruptured, I had to relearn what to trust, how to kind of reinvent this idea of the gut or the head, or, like, the knowledge system. But I think in the same way, as an immigrant who came to this country, in the same way when you're separated from the land, you're learning to recompose. And I like to call it the guts of the flux. And so this in-between place where you're recomposing what it means to language in relation to everything around you. In the same way, I feel like when there's illness in the land, or there's a rupture, you're relearning how to language your body and reorient it to the land.
I mean, and as we know, like, physically, the gut is our brain. It's our other brain. We know that, right? And so how do we, like, wrestle with that? Again, as an American who's probably eaten way too much McDonald's in my life, you know, like, what does that say about what my gut does? You know, my this brain down here that's, like, getting French fries or something. Like, but it changes. It changes the thinking. It changes the seeing. It changes the observation. And so I wonder about that too, because what you're presenting in this work, I mean, the cover, show them again, the cover, this is this map we have here. This
my mom drew this. This is, I told her to, from memory, just draw where she grew up, which I reference in the work. And so she has things like the King's Palace, or grew up here, used to walk here, Elisha, grandmother, and I hadn't been back to Nigeria in a long time since I moved here. And, you know, in my bio, I like to call myself a Nigerian American writer. I'm always writing about home, and, you know. But when I went back, I felt so disoriented. I wanted to leave. I didn't feel good. I felt off. Yeah, I think a lot of this work is also thinking about what that binary of, like, outside or inside is, you know, these knowledge systems, these Ifa divinatory systems that, growing up in a Christian household, I was told to be fearful of, but a lot of those systems I turned to or informed my illness and my healing, and I don't think it resolves any of those things, but I think it kind of places them next to each other and considers what happens as you're moving through.
I think we might close in that space too, right, of resolve, resolution. You know, I think, you know, we've spent the last several years wrestling with our various divinatory practices, right? Oh, I see what's about to happen. Oh, I see what's going down. Oh, listen to da-da-da, et cetera. And then, you know, shit just goes down and it happens, even though it's like, we told y'all. But the then what? You know, the then what? And I think the then what is, I find that here in this work. I find that in the first, how we listen to each other,
how we support each other. I mean, I've said for what, 12 days now? I don't know. Don't make me count it. Like, the way we get through this is each other, period. And so then, again, what does the art do to help us out here? Mm. And I think one of those things that you're saying is, A, like, listening to each other. B, turning to those old practices and saying, what can I get from this? But mm-hmm. also, what can't I get from this? Because mm-hmm. sometimes my mommy is not right. You know, sometimes it's just incorrect. Because he's also from here. You know what I mean? We're all from here trying to figure this out. And here, not even being America, but being now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I think that the way, like, I'm just going to take it to form here. Because mm-hmm. I think that the form of this work, which is written in these, it's almost, how would I put it? It's almost like a vitrine with, you know, this is this figure. It's almost like a scientific textbook, but of language. It's almost like a memoir, but of poetry. It's almost like, right? Mm. And doing that, I think we have to be disrupted. We have to be shaken off of this base, and I think that you're doing that. And I wonder how you might want to leave us and let us in before we break up.
Yeah, I think that I am in a place in my life right now where I have surgeries coming up, and I'm quite sick again. And remembering that everything is a circle, mm-hmm. but also remembering that these tools, poetry and writing, they're not it's quite ableist to think of this work as like a work of healing or something that I did to heal myself. I think it was just a work of moving through. Mm. Yeah, that's what it is.
Moving through.
Yeah.
All right. I like moving through it. Yeah. It allows us to get somewhere new, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll take it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Yeah, we're all going to be moving through. What a fantastic place to conclude. Those listening at home on WGXC Waveform Radio for Open Ears, thanks for joining us. Pour yourself something nice. We're about to have a little wine, bubbly water. So everyone here, please mingle over there, and I'll put the heat back up too. And of course, after you've picked up both of these wonderful books, which are both available from Nightboat Books. Thanks for being here.